To Want a Boy. Chapter 6. Tad dropped his overnighter when he saw me, and threw his arms unashamedly around my chest in a huge bear hug. He was getting so big, he was no longer a boy, but a young carbon copy of myself. "Man, this is the greatest!" he yelled. "You eatin', kid?" I asked. "Yep. Like that stewardess fed my face through the whole trip. Hey, did you get an eyeball of her? Wow!" he nudged me slyly. "What kind of a food we get to take with us?" he asked in the same breath. "I waited for you before I bought. I don't know what you eat anymore." Tad stopped suddenly and stared quizzically at me a moment. He seemed to want to say something serious, but couldn't. Then, "Yeah, how about that?" was all he could muster. I laughed and herded him into the baggage department where we got our gear, then on out to the car and on to a grocery store. The supermarkets were all closed, but we found a liquor store that was amply packed with canned goods, and we stocked up. That kid nearly bought the store out. As a concession to his maturity, I bought 2 6-packs and decided to just up and offer him a beer once we got set up. The thought somehow pleased me. I'd never gotten much out of drinking, but the thought of sharing a couple of beers with a guy's son over a campfire sounded too good to miss. The little Henry J. purred right along, and the gravel road of the dispatcher had told me to look for was easy to find in the moonlight. It wound around the mountain for 6 or 7 miles, and then degenerated into a dirt track. 2 miles farther, we came to the stream and turned down an almost hidden opening in foliage. Huge fir branches covered most of the little roadbed, and they scraped and scratched as we eased through. Then an opening in the foliage appeared, and we were in a paradise. Tad jumped out even before I could get the car stopped. Moss covered everything, with trilliums and yellow violets bursting through around old rotting logs. A tiger lily nearly 4 foot high drooped its freckled orange face at the sight of humans come to desecrate this bit of heaven. Tad hurried down to the stream, only to return seconds later disappointed. "There can't be any fish in there," he exclaimed with disappointment. "The water's too damned clear. I can see every rock on the bottom." When I laughed at him, he demanded that I come and see. The water was so clear you could not begin to gauge its depth. The rocks looked so close you could wade to them, but I knew better. Just to our right, a huge fir trunk had fallen, partially damming the stream, and around the base, the water looked very deep and black in the pale moonlight. "That's where your trout'll be, Tad," I said, pointing. "But not tonight. You'll have to wait till sunup, boy. It's time to get set up camp now." "And eat," he added. While I unrolled the sleeping bags and unpacked the gear, Tad hunted out some big flat rocks for the fireplace, and then gathered some dry wood for a fire. He was fast and experienced, and by the time I had our camp set out and fishing gear assembled for morning, he had a pot of coffee ready, hot and steaming. The beer would have to wait. I snickered to myself as I thought about it. Maybe in the afternoon when it got hot. Right now, nothing could be so delicious as a mug of steaming, fragrant camp coffee. We squatted on our haunches and cradled the mugs close to our chins where we could sip and feel the fragrance and steam on our faces. I kept my eyes down on the ground, not wanting to look across at his crotch, now blatantly visible in the flickering firelight. I studied the ground minutely until he asked some question or other, and I unconsciously glanced up to answer. My eyes caught and then held at the bulge in his Levi's. Good God, the kid was every bit as big as me. The revelation stunned me for some minutes. I never did answer the question, but Tad didn't seem irritated. He was content to sit there and stare at the flickering embers of the fire, dancing such a merry tune in the night. Slowly, with a sense of relief that nearly drowned me, I realized that Tad had passed the stage where he was really appealing to my baser instincts. He was now a big, big man, and his bulge no longer bothered me. I moved back off my haunches and stretched out onto the moss. It was beginning to get moist with dew, but I didn't care. I could again enjoy my boy free of worry. I stretched a damn mile. "Keep your big feet out of the fire," Tad warned, and I laughed. I had 3 days neither of us will ever forget. There were a few queasy moments when I wasn't so sure of myself, seeing his beautiful lean body naked as he dove into the icy water, having him come up and join me when I'd snuck off to take a leak. That was the worst time. Tad looked down laughing and said, "Now I know where I got this elephant trunk." I tried to laugh, but it caught in my throat, and as soon as I'd re-zipped my pants, I knew I was going to have to say something. My beet-red face, like he'd pulled a boo-boo. "I didn't embarrass you, did I, Dad?" he asked. I reached over and tousled his head playfully. "No, Tad. I just wish you hadn't inherited that part of me. That's all." He squatted down next to the fire and put a skillet on to heat. I'm the envy of every kid I ever took Jim with, but I guess there are going to be problems. Is that what happened between you and Mom? He didn't look up at me, but I could feel his tenseness as he waited for the answer. Partly, I guess, I admitted, but neither of us had been around and we both were too ignorant. Don't ever make that mistake, Tad. He looked up with a sly grin. I'm not, he said with assurance. I know it's a living hell staying with her, isn't it? He asked, this time looking at me straight in the eye. No, I answered, telling at least part of the truth. There's no real love, but I have three great kids and I don't have the bickering and fighting some people have. I guess that's part of the reason I stay on the road, though. I know. Weren't you thinking strong about leaving us a few months back? You acted so funny. I think even Mother noticed it. I took nearly a minute to find an answer to that one. Finally, the priest's words returned to help me. I guess I just got a burr under my saddle. They say that's pretty normal when a man hits his 40s. I got over it. Thank God, he exclaimed. I couldn't live in that cold house one more day if I didn't think you'd be coming back, Dad. That's what got the burr out, Tad, I told him. We sat staring at the grease popping in the skillet. Tad dipped the fish in cornmeal and dropped them onto the pan. There is practically no sound or sight or smell on earth as great as a freshly caught fish sizzling in a skillet over an open campfire. It took all our senses away from our problems for some minutes. Finally, as Tad forked a tail over, I gathered my courage and said, "With the size of you what it is, have you ever been bothered by man or other boys?" "Queers?" He looked shocked. "Hell no! I'd kill him! What would they bother me for? Do I look like a pussy?" His innocence made me laugh. "No, Tad, you don't look like a pansy. But the pansies might look for you. They become quite obsessed by a really big man." "I'd kill him," he answered firmly. "No, Tad. Pity them if you like, and avoid them like the plague. But don't be brutal with them. They have a king-size burr under their saddles. And that's all they got, too. A lot of them," he opinioned. Now I'd done my duty, and I knew I could be proud of my son. I stood up and stretched. "The fish are done," he said. "Great. How about a beer?" I asked. The look Tad shot me in that second was delight to my soul. It was a mixture of surprise, delight, sudden realization that he had become a man in my eyes. All these things flashed through his face. "Sure, Dad," he said quietly, as though he'd been drinking buddies for at least a century. We were rained out on the third day, or we might have never left. Spring vacation would be over before I could possibly return him home, even if I got a direct load. All the way back into Seattle, he pleaded with me to let him skip school until we could get home. For the 1100th time, I told him we'd wait until I saw what load I'd get before we decided, but this only made him plead all the harder. I stopped at a cafe for breakfast before going to the warehouse, and by this time he was so feverishly worked up on the subject he could hardly eat. Neither could I, with him raving so. I went to the payphone and called in. "Got one to Abilene, not close enough," he gloated. "When do I leave?" I asked. "Any time. How's the fishing?" "No good, huh?" His voice wore a smile. "If you say so. I'll tell you all about it when I get there. I had my son fly out. We had a ball," I told him. There was a groan at the other end of the line. "I suppose you think he'll keep his mouth shut," he teased sarcastically. "If I tell him to," I answered cryptically. "You tell him. See ya," and he hung up. "Well," Tad demanded when I returned to the table, "I guess you can ride with me." "Going to Abilene," I said nonchalantly. "Whoopee!" And the other diners all jumped in their seats and turned. Most of them smiled. "Hey, would you mind if I ordered a little more?" Tad asked suddenly. "I'm starving to death." And he ate, and ate, and ate. I stretched back in my chair and slowly went through three more cups of coffee while he horsed down enough for six men. The other diners and the waitress looked on with awe. My pride in my son just sitting there wolfing down all that food, his innocence, his good clean look, nearly choked me. I was really fortunate among men. At the warehouse, we thanked the dispatcher. I finally learned his name was Fred Hawkins. I made a mental note to send him some fishing gear or something to thank him for being such a thoughtful guy. We got our load and then moved on out. It was Tad's first trip through the Northwest. He'd visited many forests, hunting and fishing with me, but he'd never seen greenery so lush as this, or the lone white sentinels rising so high above the forests. Mount St. Helens particularly fascinated him. Helens is certainly not one of the highest of the mountains. It ranks fairly low in comparison to the other snow caps of the Great Northwest. What got Tad was its amazing similarity to Mount Fujiyama of Japan. Tad had never been to Japan, but he had seen so many pictures of the great mountain that he couldn't get over finding a small duplicate copy here in the States. "Why don't they tell you these things in school, for cripe's sakes?" he kept repeating over and over. He kept his eye on that peak until it actually disappeared over the horizon. I was only sorry that I'd been in such a rush to get him on a plane that he'd missed all the sights as he flew. Tad kept a running dialogue, shooting me questions, thinking out loud, exclaiming over everything he saw. I don't believe I have ever had a trip go by so fast. It seemed that we were no sooner on the road than I was pulling into Abilene and then heading on home. When we pulled into my home dock, I was almost sad. I kept an old 56 Ford parked next to my regular space, and we locked up the Kenworth and headed home. "Dinner's almost ready," was Martha's wildly excited greeting. Tad and I looked at each other for a few seconds and then busted out laughing. Tad had missed 2 days of school, but he'd gained far more than he'd lost, and so had I. Never again would I have to worry about being around my boy. I knew now that as long as I kept the hungers of my body reasonably satisfied, I could hope to enjoy a normal relationship indefinitely with one person in the world that meant the most to me. Sort of like an epileptic, I thought wryly. As long as I remember to take a pill, I'd have no more problem. The problem now, of course, was to find a more palatable pill.